Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
As people become more negative about Justin Trudeau, it seems to me that the strategy is, his strategy is to be more front and center. I guess to try to, you know, convince people to change their minds, but it's not working. I mean, our latest poll shows that the Conservatives are ahead by 18 points.
And we've seen this before. They really feel they can rescue the situation by just getting out more into a public arena where people don't want to see them anymore. It's like, oh my God, are you back again? And this is directed at Justin Trudeau now because, not just because I challenge him on virtually everything, and I do, I'd love to have a conversation with Mr. Trudeau. I've spoken with the last six prime ministers multiples of times, and they've not always been really pleasant conversations. They've been challenging, but Mr. Trudeau's the only one who hasn't had the time to join us in the studio, the time to join us in the studio. But here he is. He's out there every day now. I'll do 2 billion here, 6 billion here. $3 billion over there, $1.5 billion over here. The budget's coming up. What do you want us to spend the money on? Billions and billions. I'll just see if I can buy my way back into your public favor. Not going to happen. I just don't believe it's going to happen. And that was Sean Simpson we spoke with yesterday, Vice President of Ipsos. And last week we spoke with Daryl Bricker, the CEO of Ipsos, about that poll, which shows the Liberals 18% behind the Conservatives. And the NDP behind the Liberals, not looking good for Mr. Singh, not looking good for Mr. Trudeau, who continues to insist he will be the standard bearer for the Liberal Party in the upcoming election. So we're going to open up the phone lines in a bit and talk about this. But I make it my business to read Tristan Hopper's column, his op-ed, his columns, in the National Post, called First Reading. And they're invariably informative, and they are entertaining. And I'm not blowing smoke in any particular compass point area, Tristan, when I say that. I really, really like your work. How are you?
Oh, good. Thanks for reading.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't miss it. And and the one that I was looking at the other day was the one that has to do with Mr. Trudeau. And it was, let me just get the headline here, Trudeau's weird habit of denouncing his own government. I hadn't ever really thought about it, and then I read your piece, and I thought, yeah. And you've got him doing it, and let's start with the issue of immigration. So yeah, walk us through what you wrote about the immigration aspect of his messaging.
Sure. So this has been coming up, I'd say, for a few months now, but it was he was at a housing announcement just last week in Dartmouth, and then a reporter asked him, I didn't catch the question, but this happens all the time. They say, okay, well, you just opened, like, you know, 30 condos here in Dartmouth or whatever it was, but that's like 45 minutes worth of immigration, because if you haven't noticed, immigration is at the highest rate it's ever been for, you know, no conceivable reason. So, you know, you can do whatever you want on housing. If you're just pouring in a million people every 9 months, what's the point? So that was what I assumed the question was. And Trudeau's response was, I agree with you. Way too much immigration. Yeah, way too much way too many temporary foreign workers, too many students. Yeah, it's a real problem. I'm paraphrasing. But essentially, he gave the argument that I've been making in the pages of the National Post, many other, basically every economist in the country has now been making, is that, migration's way too high, and it's putting insane pressure on, he said it was depressing wages, basically everything we've been screaming at the government for the past year. It's depressing wages, making housing more unaffordable, and making businesses less competitive, because if you can just hire cheap imported labor, there's no reason to sort of focus on bettering your company's structure. So for a number of reasons, temporary migration is too high. So that was sort of dissonant to a lot of people, because they're saying, well, who dialed up temporary immigration?
That's right.
And there's a variety of reasons why it is indeed the fault of the Trudeau government. So we might be entering a new era in which every time you point out a flaw of his government, he just says, oh, I agree with you. Just awful, wretched in every way. And, you know, how do you respond to that? So maybe it's a good strategy.
You know, it is an interesting strategy because if you're not aware of the developments of a situation, you could say, well, this guy actually gets it. Right? I mean, if only
the czar knew phenomenon. So this is the idea in czarist Russia, where the czar would sort of position himself, you know, so far ahead of his ministers that if you were just some peasant, you know, having your grain taken by Cossacks, you'd say, oh, if only the czar knew about this, he'd put a stop to it. Not realizing, you know, you're being oppressed as a direct result of his policies, but you sort of saw him as apart from his policies. So, yeah, maybe that's what he's trying to do here. Or maybe he doesn't know. Maybe he legitimately, like, really? The migration?
I hope not.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, I hope it's not a situation like that where he just was unaware because nobody handed him some crib notes. But I like this one a lot because the carbon tax, of course, has been the number one issue in the news and has been the number one issue for us to talk about for some time now. Well, it's up certainly in the top three.
Yeah.
Trudeau acknowledged, right, that the carbon tax could indeed make life unaffordable. This is after he ran around the country, continues to run around the country with his sidekick, Guilbeault, and saying, well, no, 8 out of 10, as the parliamentary budget officer told us, 8 out of 10 Canadians are going to be better off because of the rebates. Well, the parliamentary budget officer was on this program just 3 weeks ago telling us, I never said that, and that's not the case. But here's Mr. Trudeau saying the carbon tax could make life unaffordable. So, I mean, what's your take on this one?
I've seen people who are very much carbon tax supporters, economists who are saying with the sort of carve out that he ordered last year. I mean, that's if you want to kill a carbon tax, just, you know, kill even among supporters and just sort of erase it as a policy. That was a pretty good way of doing it. So, yeah, essentially what you were saying, the argument since day one was whenever the Conservatives or any other opponent said, well, gas is more expensive, you're screwing over the working class. Everybody, it's making everything more expensive. The response to that was always, well, wait for your rebate to come in, because the rebate for most Canadians is going to be higher. So if you're just talking about your average middle-income Canadians, on the balance of household income, they're actually going to do better. That was consistently the response. So no, it doesn't affect affordability because we built in the rebate system. This isn't a tax grab. It's just a way to sort of reduce emissions. But suddenly, you have a few ridings in Atlantic Canada saying, well, I can't pay my heating bill anymore because the carbon tax on heating oil is too high. So you order a carve out on the carbon tax on heating oil, and then you order no more carve outs. So with that action, you're basically loudly announcing with a megaphone, oh, actually, it does make your bills harder to pay. But for some reason, we're deciding it's only the case for these very few homes in Atlantic Canada that still use heating oil, which is real bad for the environment in terms of heating your home. You'd be better off using natural gas and then nothing else. So yeah, I would argue that was, he didn't come out and say, hey, the carbon tax is unaffordable, but in terms of actions that would communicate that as loudly as possible, that's how you would do it.
Yeah, and then there's the issue of housing, which, as you point out, he says shouldn't be Ottawa's job, and yet here he is out everywhere these days pouring billions of hypothetical dollars into housing.
That's right, yeah. So this came up. Oh, I forget exactly where, but it was a couple months ago. And again, this got a lot of attention because it was sort of different than what he'd been saying. It was another announcement, and someone said, well, you know, we know the numbers. We know housing starts down. You know, you can announce this one condo development right here, but we're still screwed on housing by any measure. So how can you call this a success? Is essentially the question. And he said, well, housing is not a federal responsibility, which is fine. It technically isn't. But that's not the argument he's been making since the beginning. So he could have gone out and from the beginning in 2015 said, yeah, housing's a problem, but it's a provincial thing. Talk to your provincial representatives. That's fine. But from the beginning, if you read the Liberal Party platform in that year, chapter one is we're going to make housing unaffordable. So, yeah, I think I could characterize that as him sort of denouncing his own government's policy because he is the head of a government that has loudly said since day one, we are the ones to make housing affordable from a federal level. We're going to force the provinces to do it. And then suddenly turns around and says, who said it's a federal responsibility? We have nothing to do. What's a house?
Yeah, that's the argument of convenience. At the moment, it's convenient. And I just made that up, and I couldn't possibly say it again. So let's finish with this one. And I was when I got to you, the sort of the sub-headline in your piece, he said, procurement particularly in regards to ArriveCan, is a scandalous mess. This is Mr. Trudeau saying procurement, particularly in regards to ArriveCan, is a scandalous mess. And I'm saying to myself, now, how did he twist that one?
Yeah, this was this was one of our newest. There's probably still going to be a few more revelations with ArriveCan. You know, $60 million or more than that. Just over $60 million for an app that, according to tech people we've contacted, they said you could have done this for $100,000. You know, add $500,000 worth of marketing. There's no reason you couldn't have done this for under $1 million. So $59 million in mystery money. We don't know where it went. And then we're finding, you know, shoddy bids, contractors. The whole thing is a mess. And then this was brought up to Mr. Trudeau, and we should almost sort of do sort of a quiz on the National Post website. You know, did Trudeau say this, or did the Conservatives say this? Because he essentially said, oh yeah, that's a disaster. You know, governments have to be good stewards of money. Procurement is a problem. Just agreed, very similar to what he said on immigration, agreed with all of the points. You know, obviously this is a terrible situation and something needs to be done. But it wasn't like, you know, as a result of that, I fired these people or I've made this policy change. Just, oh, I agree with you. Yeah, that's a terrible way to run things.
Yeah, and it just makes your head ache after you go through a few of them. A really great piece. Tristan, thanks for joining us. I mean it. I always enjoy reading your first reading, and I hope you'll come back. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.